skies for amber waves of grain, for purple mountains.
Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you, the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being, because we have with us a fascinating program. We have with us on the line William H. Kennedy, and we're going to be talking about his book, Lucifer's Lodge. Bill, William, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Oh, thank you, Dr. Stan. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, I was intrigued by reading the opening chapter, the foreword to Lucifer's Lodge, because Mr. Kennedy had been a friend of Malachi Martin, and those of you who follow our ministry know that we had an opportunity to meet Malachi and to actually talk to him a number of times on and off the radio. In fact, even we have a four-tape set called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. We've read his books, enjoyed them, certainly were introduced to him many years ago when we read his book, The Hostages of the Devil. And this introduced us into the occult world, and really based upon the personal experience of five exorcisms carried out by the Catholic Church. But then, of course, we talked extensively about Malachi's concern about the satanic influence within the Catholic Church. Now, that may seem almost paradoxical, but he had actually talked to Mr. Kennedy and encouraged him to write a book. So I'm going to let Mr. Kennedy tell you about his experiences with Malachi Martin. Why don't you give a little of the background of how you happened to meet him, what he encouraged you to do, and, of course, the evolution of your thought as you began to realize that this was not simply the rantings of somebody who had fallen off the turnip truck. This was a man who was deeply concerned about what had happened to his church.
Well, very good, Dr. Stan. I first met Malachi Martin. I spoke with him by telephone in 1995, and this was arranged by Dr. Rama P. Kumaraswamy, who is a medical doctor in the New York, Connecticut area, who was a very, very close friend of Father Martin's. I was an aspiring writer at the time. I had had my first article out in Great Britain, and Dr. Kumaraswamy suggested that I write a book on traditional Catholic priests, and Father Martin was one of the people who we decided to write a chapter on.
Hardly a traditional Catholic priest, however.
In many ways he was, in the sense of, you know, liking the old Latin Mass.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And that's what I really mean by a traditional Catholic priest, in the sense of preferring the pre-Vatican days of the Church.
All right, fine. Well, I certainly wouldn't argue with that point at all. But he was a very unusual, a very insightful man. So anyway, you had an appointment to have a meeting with him?
Yes, I met him in January of 1996, and I went down to New York, and I met him at his Manhattan apartment. And as I was collecting some information from him, some data for this chapter in the book, he said something stunning. He told me that Bernard Law of Boston, who was the cardinal here, was running a pedophile ring, and that some of these pedophiles were Satanists. This was about the time Windswept House had come out, and I had just started Windswept House, but he was giving me specific information about Cardinal Law here in Boston, which at the time I thought it was, you know, a very absurd thing to say. And he told me to actually come up here and investigate it, and to
hold that thought. We'll
sure.
be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy, who's the author of a book called Lucifer's Lodge, which we're going to be carrying because I think it's a very important book. William said he was gone to somewhere in New England to interview Father Martin, and Father Martin had suggested that he explore the pedophile ring in the diocese in Chicago that was headed at that time by Cardinal was it Bernardine?
Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston what specifically Father Martin had told me. Bernardine is actually featured in Windswept House. I'm from Massachusetts, so what Father Martin wanted me to do was come back up here and see if I could get any confirmation about the satanic ring of pedophiles that he heard about. He heard about them through two ways. Number one, some of these people would write him letters, some of these victims. And number two, he always had kind of a hand in the Vatican, and he was always fed information from Rome from insiders who would leak things to him.
I know, we'd always heard rumors that Father Martin was really a part of Vatican intelligence or had ties to Vatican intelligence. Do you think that might be a fair statement? Because they have a very effective intelligence gathering organization.
Well, yes, Father Martin actually had a very strong relationship with Vatican intelligence when he served in the Vatican from 1958 to 1965, and he was sent on various missions into Eastern Europe to bring money to the church that was suffering under communism, and even went to Poland and knew the current Holy Father a long, long time ago. Now, some of these links to Vatican intelligence he certainly tapped into over the years for this information. As he got older, a lot of these sources started to die off, but he still had a few left when he had passed away in 1999. Now, the essence of what he was saying back in 96 was that there were, as I said, a very small minority of Catholic priests in Boston who were running this pedophile ring, and they had the protection of Cardinal Bernard Law of Boston, who he claimed would do anything to protect these priests. Now, at the time, I had only heard of one child molesting priest in Boston in my whole life, and I'm from here, so I thought that was an extraordinary claim. Now, what happened after that is Father Martin, just to, you know, flash ahead a bit, Father Martin passed away in 1999 of natural causes. He died of heart disease. He was 78 years old. And a couple years after that, in January of 2002, the Boston Globe broke the story that Cardinal Law was, in fact, protecting a ring of pedophile
priests. Hold that thought right there.
Sure.
Well, okay, our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy. His book is... our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy. His book is Lucifer's Lodge, and of course he is telling us now that the Boston Globe broke a story somewhere about shortly after Malachi Martin died that Bernard Law now was this in Boston or in Chicago?
This is in Boston.
All right,
Bernard Law was the cardinal of the Archdiocese of Boston,
okay,
in Massachusetts. And in 2002, the Boston Globe had broke a story that Cardinal Law was protecting a ring of pedophile priests, and it confirmed everything that Martin had told me back in January of 1996. This was 6 years later. And as time went on over the next year and a half, a whole whirlwind of stories came through the Boston Globe and Boston Herald and Irish Times concerning these pedophile priests who were practicing satanic ceremonies as part and parcel of their rape of children and women, and that they had the protection of the highest echelons of the Roman Catholic Church, including cardinals, papal ambassadors, which are called nuncios, even straight up to the Petrine office itself.
Now, of course, you are Catholic, and you are quite offended by this, quite obviously.
Yes, I'm a born and bred Catholic. I went to Catholic schools. I had no idea any of this was going on until January of 2002 when the Boston Globe broke the story.
Well, had you read the book Windswept House by Father Martin?
I had read Windswept House, but the thing about that book is it used a lot of fictional names, And it's not that I denied the entire thesis of it. That focused mostly on Chicago and Rome.
Right.
And I just didn't buy it at the time that cardinal law could have gotten away with controlling or running a pedophile ring of Satanists in Boston because, you know, it's a very tight-knit community here, and I just didn't think he could hide it on the level that Father Malachy Martin was telling me he was. I was proven absolutely wrong, though.
I, of course, had talked to Father Martin before he passed away, asked him about Windswept House, about his description of the satanic sacrifice that was carried out. It was a feigned sacrifice. It wasn't a real human sacrifice, but it was time to coordinate with a real human sacrifice. It was carried out in the basement of the Vatican by a number of priests who supposedly, you know, were Catholic, but they really weren't. They were Satanists working within the Vatican itself. And he said that story is absolutely true. He said all of the book is true, except I had to change the names. Well, of course, at the time, I was well aware of this satanic conspiracy that grips our world, but I'm sure to the average person out there, why people really don't believe this. This is sort of thing you see on the X-Files or you see on television, but this isn't the real world, and the tragedy is it is the real world, and most people live in a very make-believe Truman Show type of world. They don't understand the true nature of the spiritual battle in which we're engaged today. So you pick up the story from there, William.
Okay, so what had happened over the next year and a half is stories in the newspaper about pedophile priests began to emerge, and some of these stories had satanic and Luciferian rituals as a part of the narrative of what happened to children. Now, I can give you one name, Reverend Bernard Lane in Boston. He ran a place called the Alpha Omega House in a suburb of Boston called Littleton. And this place had a room called the Black Room. This was a home for wayward boys. And according to some interviews I did with people who used to live there as teenagers, they were sent there by the state of Massachusetts, is that Lane regularly molested the children there, but he also had a ritual chamber which they called the Black Room. And this was a room that was painted black, and he would take you know, teen boys and preteen boys in there and sexually abuse them. And on several occasions, there was an inverted cross and a cross on the ground during the actual sexual abuse.
And I think really what people don't understand is that so much of the pedophilia and homosexuality has a spiritual element to it. It's a defiance of God and of God's laws, and that's why, of course, they would have the cross on the ground or upside down as a demonstration of their defiance of God. This is really what it's all about. But we don't like to talk about that, or we might offend somebody, and yet there's a spiritual component to everything that goes on today, including homosexuality.
Well, certainly so, and one thing I discovered in Boston, in the Boston cases, there was a very thin line between the gay rights movement and the pedophile movement, and this is personified in one priest by the name of Father Paul Shanley. Now, Father Paul Shanley was assigned to the Archdiocese of Boston, and he was the he was called the hippie priest. And he would go out and help wayward and homeward, you know, lost boys, but he would sexually abuse them. Now, at the same time, he was working as a gay rights activist with people like State Representative Elaine Noble, who were aware of his pedophilia. You know, this came out in the New England Cable News Network. And now Shanley worked with Elaine Noble, Representative Elaine Noble, who knew he was sexually abusing children, did nothing about it. Shanley went on to be a founder of NAMBLA, the North American Man-Boy Love Association, and during all of this, as complaints came into the Chancery, Cardinal Medeiros, who was there before Law, did absolutely nothing, and Cardinal Bernard Law did absolutely nothing to stop Father Paul Shanley's activity. Even when they found out that he was saying that it was perfectly normal for children and animals to have sexual relations, that's how far he went, and he was still protected by the Archdiocese.
Well, of course, I'm sure this is probably going to be very expensive for them. Have a lot of lawsuits been filed, a lot of the young men, or even older men today, because were victims of this, of these predatory priests. They brought lawsuits. This is really the only way this has really come out, isn't it? The
oh,
only
sure.
way the church would finally admit what was going on and stop covering for this?
Well, to a certain extent, they were exposed. They never really admitted anything. Now, the Archdiocese of Los Angeles today in a paper said they will have to pay out $1.5 billion in claims to victims of sexual abuse. Why this is happening, the Pope is meeting with the bishops of New England in Rome. This is on the cover of the Boston Globe today. And what he told the bishops of New England was, you know, take care of your priests. Worry about your priests. They've suffered greatly under all of this media attention. And he didn't even mention the victims. He didn't even say, pray for the victims. He said, pray for your fellow priests.
And this, of course, is the tragedy of what's going on today. And, of course, this is going to, you know, bankrupt the church. But not only that, but, of course, I'm sure that many Catholics are just totally disillusioned with Christianity because of this, because of what they believed in. And suddenly they find that these people, at least maybe 2 or 3% of them are involved. Only 2 or 3% of the priests actively involved in pedophilia. But isn't there a fairly significant number of them who are actually homosexuals?
Well, yeah, I mean, there again, there's a very fine line between, you know, Father Malachy said about 7 to 12% of Roman Catholic priests have experimented with some form of homosexuality. And then, as you said, about 1 to 3% would be into the satanic pedophilia area. But what you have to keep in mind is that the seminaries of the Roman Catholic Church encourage both things. They encourage homosexuality amongst their priests, and they encourage pedophilia amongst their priests.
But isn't this because they have been infiltrated by these dark spiritual forces? In other words, this is not a position of the church at all, but don't you think the church has actually been targeted by Satan's legions?
Well, yes, it's been targeted certainly on a metaphysical level.
That's what I'm really talking about.
Yeah, I mean, in order, in my understanding, in order to be able to even do anything like that, something as absurd as to have a sex with a preteen boy, you would have to have given some part of your will over to, you know, the infernal regions.
And, of course, it even goes not only a pedophilia with boys, but haven't many of the nuns actually been forced or coerced into sexual activity by their superiors?
Certainly so. There was a priest in Boston named Father Robert Meffin who recruited young high school girls for the Sisters of St. Joseph, you know, girls 13 and 14, and he would take them to a special high school in Kingston, Massachusetts. And he would get them, when they were down there and settled, he would meet with them privately, and he would reveal to them that he was Jesus Christ. And he would encourage them to have sexual relations with them and practice a form of sex magic. And what he told them was is that there were spiritual stages attached to having sex with him because he was Jesus Christ. Now, that is a form of Luciferianism. It's a mimicking of Lucifer's rebellion against God, which is chronicled in Isaiah chapter 14. In other words, Robert Meffin was taking the place of Christ in a form of Luciferian inversion and having these young virginal girls have sex with him as purely a way to offend God.
And I think that what people must understand is there really is a conspiracy against God, an organized, orchestrated effort, and many times people in key positions within the hierarchy of the church in certain of the dioceses are supporting this. Now, I know that there are other dioceses where they have good leadership, aren't there, many of the dioceses?
Well, the problem is, since the 1960s, there's no diocese on earth that seems to be exempt from this problem that
really?
I've seen so far. I mean, things are just coming out. It's the tip of the iceberg. And there are certainly good Catholic priests out there and some good bishops. But when the higher-ups are corrupt, you know, a fish rots from the head down. That's the way it goes.
Well, I think it's so important that people understand, and of course that we expose, because the one thing that these forces of darkness cannot stand is the exposure of light. So we're going to be back here in just a moment with our special guest, Mr. William H. Kennedy, who's written a book entitled Lucifer's Lodge. It was inspired by Malachi Martin, who told him that somebody had to write a book about this and encouraged him to do it after Malachi passed away. why William H. Kennedy has taken this onto himself. We'll be right back in just a moment with our special guest. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is William H. Kennedy, and we're talking about his book, Lucifer's Lodge, which is based upon his study of the satanic forces at work within the Catholic Church today. Now, for our listeners across the nation, I simply want to point out that we have the same satanic forces working within the Protestant Church, so don't sit back and say, oh, well, it's just them. We always knew that they were bad. We got nothing to worry about because we're Protestants. Well, let me tell you, we'll be doing some programs in the near future about the satanic or New Age Luciferian movement within the Protestant Church. So don't worry about that. We've got some great new programs lined up. But let's stick with Mr. Kennedy's story. So you begin to develop this, and tell us as your evolution of thought, as you begin to realize what was really going on in the church that you adhered to and the church you supported, and yet suddenly this terrible disillusionment to find out that what Father Malachi Martin had told you was really true.
Well, it was pretty simple, the evolution of it. It was splashed on the headlines on every major newspaper in the United States and Europe. So I really didn't have to do all that much research for this book. The Boston Globe, Boston Herald, Boston Phoenix, and Irish Times, and the BBC were kind enough to do the research for me. And what I did is I just sat back and I waited for these stories of satanic ritual abuse to come forward in the mainstream papers. Now, I must say this. These stories would appear, you know, sometimes even on the front page, but then they'd very, very quickly just disappear off the face of the earth, and sometimes you'd even have trouble finding them on the internet. So there seems to be almost something shady about how the newspapers really didn't cover or fully cover or keep up on these stories. They kind of put them on the back burner. For reasons I'm unclear of.
Well, you have to keep listening to our programs. You'll understand that actually there are about six major corporations that control 95% of the means of communication in the entire Western world, and that we should not at all be surprised that they all seem to be pushing exactly the same direction. Some pretending to be conservative, some pretending to be liberal, but none of them telling the people the truth about the satanic forces in our world.
Well, an incomplete story is very much an untruth if you don't follow up on things and connect a few dots. For example, I mentioned earlier Reverend Bernard Lane and Reverend Paul Shanley. Well, they were in cahoots together. Father Paul Shanley would take children to Bernard Lane's Alpha Omega House in Littleton, Mass., and they'd both sexually abuse children together in the ritual chamber called the Black Room, with the full knowledge of the Chancery in Boston. So what you're looking at here is it is a full-blown conspiracy. Now, what Lucifer's Lodge will give you, and you can get it at williamhkennedy.com, it will give you a bird's-eye view of the world situation concerning satanic pedophilia and the ritual abuse of women and children. Now, back in 96, when I was with Father Martin, he had a bird's eye view and I had more of a worm's eye view. You know, I was down, you know, I didn't think any of it was true. And, I even quoted to Malachi, I quoted John Hume, the philosopher, and said, an extraordinary claim requires extraordinary evidence. Now, what I am giving you in, Lucifer's Lodge is this extraordinary evidence. Now, one reviewer said that Lucifer's Lodge is a very close thing to a nonfiction version of Windswept House. Now, the interesting thing is the structure of Lucifer's Lodge where I can...
Hold that thought for just a moment here as we bring our stations back online here.
Very good.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time when we want to bring our guest back, Mr. William H. Kennedy, and of course he's saying that his book, Lucifer's Lodge, which incidentally we are going to carry as soon as I get the publisher to call me back, the book, the Lucifer's Lodge, is what many people have described as simply a real-life recapitulation of the book Windswept House, which Father Martin had written back in the mid-19 or mid-1990s, which we actually have interviews with him on. So pick up the story there. You've actually, of course, began pulling all the information you've been able to glean from the media together and put together the story of these not only pedophile but Luciferian and satanic priests working within the hierarchy, working within the structure of the Catholic Church with the full knowledge of people in positions of power, right?
Well, that's certainly the case, and what's interesting about the comparison to Windswept House is I actually put my copy of Windswept House down in the basement where I couldn't see it while I was doing this research, and I just drew all of my information from mainstream media sources, like the Boston Globe, Boston Herald, BBC, CNN, and what I discovered when I put all the puzzle pieces together was, in fact, what you just mentioned. This was a systemic, top-heavy conspiracy of Luciferian and pedophile priests who had the tacit approval and protection of the hierarchy in the church. Now, just to name a few names, Bernard Lane had to resign because of protecting these pedophile priests. Bishop Dupre of the Springfield Diocese in Massachusetts had to resign because he was charged with molesting two children himself. So in Massachusetts, one of our bishops was a child molester. Now, there's no ritual elements that have come out in his case, but one argument Father Martin used to tell me is that the sexual abuse of a child by a satanic Catholic priest is, in fact, the child acts as a proxy for Jesus Christ, and in destroying the innocence of the child, you are making an attack against the innocence of Jesus Christ. And to have done that, it is Luciferian and satanic in and of itself, although it may not have had ritual elements. Now, the majority of my cases in my book, there are ritual elements. You know, there's stories of a Catholic priest who would lay young girls in a coffin and sexually abuse them in very odd ceremonies. And he was, the same priest, Gerald Robinson, was implicated in a lot of very bizarre ritualistic sex acts, which are just now coming out. Now, that's the odd part there again. You would think that a lot of these stories would be on the headlines of, you know, the New York Times or what have you. They're not. A lot of them are buried in the third page of third-rate newspapers, so I had to do a bit of digging.
What about the Enquirer and Star, the ones that we get, the tabloids we get?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't bother with them because, on the whole, I really didn't have to.
Okay.
You know, I didn't even have to go to those papers when you have, you know, the Boston Globe won the Pulitzer Prize for its coverage of the priest pedophilia case a couple years ago. They won the Pulitzer Prize for public service. And, so I really didn't have to go to, you know, what I like to call the junk media, like the National Enquirer or Star. That just wasn't necessary.
Okay,
you know, I had to go to a few local, you know, respectable newspapers in the Midwest, but the vast majority of it is mainstream media outlets, CNN and such.
And I think it's so important that somebody's pulled all of this together, because if you have an isolated case here and an isolated case there, unless, of course, somebody pulls them all together, you don't realize that this is a widespread thing that is being allowed from the highest levels, because these dark spiritual forces have always targeted the church, either the Catholic Church or the Protestant Church, because Lucifer wants to destroy the two great branches of Christendom. He's doing a pretty good job of it, I'd say.
He's doing a good job now, but I'd also like to point out that there's something very liberating about learning about all of this. You know, the truth shall set you free. And once you get this bird's eye view of this perspective, I would say it would only strengthen your faith.
Oh, of course, this for my faith, the more I learn about, of course, the hatred that Lucifer has for God, the more I know that the story of the Bible is true, as I read.
Sure, it shines through all of this. Literature. That's the amazing part of it.
They believe in the Bible. They just hate what the Bible says, and that's why they invert everything, whether it be the cross, the altar, everything that God has planned, they would do exactly the opposite. Because they know him, they hate him, but they also fear him. We're going to be back here in just a few moments with William H. Kennedy. His book is Lucifer's Children, and we're going to carry this book because I think it's a very important book for both Catholics and Protestants to read, to understand the reality of what's really going on. It isn't X-Files, ladies and gentlemen. It's reality. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is William H. Kennedy. If you're out there in the listening audience and would like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. We'll be with you in just a moment. Just give us a call. But I think that it's important that we understand that Christendom is under attack. And certainly the Catholic Church is under attack. The Protestant Church is under attack. And, of course, the tragedy is that the average Christian has no idea what's really going on because nobody's explaining to them. That's why I think that a book like this is so important. Certainly Father Malachi Martin did a wonderful job, but he wrote from a fictional point of view because of his position, and for many reasons I'm sure he was unable to come out and give the names of the people, although it should have been very obvious as you read his book who he was talking about, and he confided in me. Of course it's all true. He just couldn't come out and release the names at that time. So now you put the book together. How long has it been together? How long has it been published, William?
It's been out since last spring.
All right. But, the hardback volume of it, though.
Oh, no. It all came out in paperback.
Okay.
I could keep the price down a little bit if I just came out with a paperback edition. So I think it was last March it came out initially. And I should also point out it's been opted for a documentary film by Global Vision Films of New York, who they do a lot of things for, like, PBS Frontline and 2020 and CNN. But my sources were so strong that Global Vision decided to pick up the option on it, and we're in negotiation with a couple of major cable networks now to have a full-length production of Lucifer's Lodge. And you can get the book Lucifer's Lodge at williamhkennedy.com right now. The film negotiations are going pretty good. It's a pretty hot topic, and I think it would be very good to get a film version of the book into the popular media.
All right, fine. The book is Lucifer's Lodge, and if you have any questions or comments, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. But Lucifer's Lodge certainly is a documentary, expose of really the literature that's out there, and you actually tell, what is it, five different stories of five different priests, or is it far more extensive than
that? It's far more extensive than that. In each chapter usually centers on a particular priest, but I do mention other cases that are relevant. For example, I mentioned different cases where
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, William H. Kennedy, his book, Lucifer's Lodge. And if you have a question or comment, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Go ahead, please. You were beginning to tell us that each chapter took one specific instance, but there were many others that were brought into the story.
Sure. If other stories appeared in the mainstream media which were similar to the primary focus of my chapter, then I would include it in there. So you get quite a few priests who are involved in ritualistic types of child abuse. The big thing, one of the major things people have to realize is when they get the book, is to certainly check my sources. You know, at the end of each chapter, I have all my sources laid out. Because some of these stories do, sound far-fetched, like that of Father Sean Fortune of Ireland, who was a Satanist Catholic priest in County Wexford, and he molested young boys, and he was also a practicing Satanist. For example, when parents would come to confront him about molesting their kids, he would threaten to hex them. He would say, Satan will haunt you for the rest of your life, or your next child will be born crippled in the name of Satan. And some bizarre things happened, like these people and these villagers, they were, you know, kind of like hillbillies. They were superstitious and quite frightened of Father Fortune. So he was able to run a reign of terror for 6 years. They constantly complained to the local bishop, who did absolutely nothing, and eventually had to resign over it. But Fortune did things like he took kids to Loftus Hall, which has a history of poltergeist activities, and he would sexually abuse children in another ritual chamber that they called the Devil's Room. Now, this is all been covered in by the Irish Times journalist Alison O'Connor. I mean, Fortune did strange things, like a woman was struck by lightning who had opposed him, and he implied to the parishioners that he had caused that through satanic magic. He said, oh, she didn't get half enough, next time she'll get more, meaning he would kill her next time. Now, it's hard for us to kind of scoff at the victims, but remember, these are very rural people, very traditional people, and they're easily influenced by a Satanist priest, and maybe they understand something about Satanist priests that we don't, and maybe their fear was very justified.
I would think that they really would be, because I believe that some of these Satanists do have supernatural power, but it comes from the dark side. And until we begin to recognize that there is this other spiritual dimension that's out there, why we really can't understand why these things are going on, or why sometimes people in the hierarchy of the Catholic Church are going right along and permitting it. Now, we know that the College of Bishops, or whatever you have, the Organization of Bishops here in the United States, has taken up this subject, and they really didn't address this hardly at all. They certainly didn't go into the satanic aspect of it, did they?
Well, you have to remember, these are the same people who were protecting pedophile priests 2 or 3 years ago. So, you know, the American bishops and the conference they have is pretty much a joke, and I would have some respect for them if they all simultaneously resigned, but anything short of that is just, you know, it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. How can a bunch of people like Wilton Gregory, who were protecting and knew about pedophile priests 2 or 3 years ago, all of a sudden be formulating a new plan to deal with the situation because they were exposed by the media? Well, you if you're exposed like that, you do the right thing and you resign.
Well, what about Father Mahoney down in Cardinal Mahoney? Is it Cardinal Mahoney?
Cardinal Mahoney is the Cardinal of Los Angeles, and he is the one who's going to have to pay out $1.5 billion to victims of child abuse in Orange County and Los Angeles County in California because of his gross negligence in the allowing of rapist priests to go around and sexually abuse children. Now, it's really bizarre. All why that McMartin case was going on, remember the famous McMartin ritual abuse case? That was actually, those cases were brought against the McMartins by William Johnson, Bishop William Johnson's old parish, the American Martyrs Church. And while Bishop Johnson, who was in Orange County, was encouraging his old parishioners to file charges against the McMartin school, he himself was protecting and shifting pedophile priests in the Orange County diocese. So you get all these very, very bizarre, twisted situations where you have Bishop William Johnson encouraging the American Martyrs Church people, you know, to basically crucify the McMartin family, while simultaneously he's bringing in pedophile priests from other part of the country and other part of the world and assigning them the parishes where they were abusing children. So what we have here is, you know, it's a real giant can of worms when you start looking at the all of the instances of satanic ritual abuse.
And I remember the Emerald case was back on the East Coast, as I remember, at the same time, and the charges of satanic ritual abuse. And there's much to suggest that that was all contrived. Maybe it was sort of like going after Martha Stewart because she sold some stock, and of course ignoring the crimes of people like Dick Cheney, who's continued receiving a salary from Halliburton that's been, of course, cheating the government at every turn. So we see this sort of creating like a mirage, sort of a straw man to knock down to conceal what's going on.
A smoke screen to cover the truly deviant activities.
Right.
Now the Emerald case, the Emerald family all went to jail. And right around the corner in Malden, Massachusetts, from their Fells Acres school, was the headquarters of the Alpha Omega House. which was under a nonprofit called Life Resources Incorporated. Now, at Life Resources Incorporated in Malden, Bernard Lane was connected with it, and there was another psychiatrist who worked for Life Resources named Dr. Scott Ward, M.D., and both of these two men were child molesters in the Malden area who were encouraging local Catholics to file charges against the Emerald family. So there again you have this bizarre can of worms smokescreen. It's the way I describe it, this whole situation reminds me of the movie Invasion of the Body Snatchers, if you remember that. Well, you don't know who's who. Your friend could be your foe, and your foe could be your friend. It's kind of hard to sort out.
Well, I think there's an effort of organized confusion. I think that they get us so confused and overloaded with a lot of facts, and we focus our attention on Toby Bryant and his rape case, or on Scott Peterson, and the really important things in life are seldom or ever mentioned. But we can only take a certain amount of information. Other than that, we get into information overload, and we sort of turn off our ability to think and think effectively about what's really going on.
Well, more people are concerned with the Olsen twins' anorexia than they are with the fact that children have been getting raped, and that's a sad commentary on the media in this country. It's what they choose to emphasize. Yeah. You know, they'd rather focus on the problems celebrities have than the problems, you know, people down the street have with rapist Satanist priests and such.
Well, I think it's such an important thing that people begin to understand the spiritual dimension behind the pedophile priest, the spiritual dimension behind the pedophilia. And until we understand the spiritual dimension, we can't understand what's really going on. If we look upon simply as a pedophile, if we don't understand what energizes him spiritually, and what energizes the homosexual priest and this whole movement within our society, we can't understand anything that's going on, because it is a defiance of God. That's what it's all about. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. Our guest this evening, William H. Kennedy, his book, Lucifer's Lodge, a fascinating read, and I'm really looking forward to getting that. We never heard from your publisher. Is he going to give?
I'm getting in touch with him. He's on vacation over the Labor Day weekend.
Okay,
but I will nail him down next week. I promise.
All right, fine. Because I really think we will be able to at least get some of this story out to our supporters across America, who at least are aware that there is a spiritual dimension what's going on, rather than the average individual who thinks that's all, as I say, under the auspices of the X-Files or similar to the X-Files.
Well, why would these priests have these bizarre ritual chambers like the Devil's Room and the Black Room if there were not some sort of nefarious metaphysical component to the abuse of children? It's not like like Paul Shanley would take kids into a confessional and abuse them in an act of inversion. So it's just constant. Why would they bother with going out of their way for these strange rituals?
If
there wasn't something, a spiritual component behind it, evil component.
Yes, and that's why I think it's so important that you actually put this all together. Well, let's talk to Mary down in Covina. Hi, Mary. Did you have a question for our guest tonight?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, I do. I'd like to ask, Mr. Kennedy mentioned the McMartins. I was always interested in that case, and of course they got off. Does he know, were they guilty?
I really, in all honesty, I don't think the McMartins were guilty. I think they were victims of a smokescreen cover-up by Bishop William Johnson of Orange County, as I said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
For all the money the state spent against prosecuting the McMartins, it was one of the most expensive prosecutions in history, they still couldn't get any solid evidence against them. In my own personal opinion, and a lot of people out there will disagree with me, I think the McMartins and the Emeralds were innocent.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks.
Sure.
Okay, Mary. A lot of strange things going on in this world, but then you listen to our program, you're probably well aware of that.
Right.
Thanks so much.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
And I have the same impression that these have all been smoke screens. A lot of intentional confusion to throw us off the track. But then, isn't that the way that you would do it? You would actually, if you wanted to commit a crime, why, you'd want to get people's attention diverted elsewhere. If you want to rob the bank, you burn down the schoolhouse.
Sure. I mean, it's a case of what I like to call managed chaos.
Right.
Wherein the people at the top create insane and chaotic situations for people below them, and it's a form of maintaining power over them.
Well, I think it's so important that we have this. And, of course, now there are really how many major chapters in your book?
Well, there are 10 chapters total. I do get into the Satanic Panic of the 80s. I cover that first with, McMartin and the Emeralds and a couple of other strange cases. But then chapters 2 through 9 are various case studies. And chapter 10, I kind of tie in everything together. Now, what you will also get in Lucifer's Lodge is a thumbnail sketch of sexual abuse within the Roman Catholic Church from the Apostolic Age up to now. This has always been kind of a problem, sexual problems in the church. You just have to read Paul's letters to the Corinthians, and you'll know what I mean. It's a very difficult situation. There's been problems in the church, from way, way back. And this will give you a history of the occult sexuality within the church. For example, in medieval times, the church often ran bordellos. I'm sorry to say I found out in my research. But I tie that into the modern cases of ritual abuse, and I argue for a lineage of this satanic ritual abuse within the Catholic Church being there for centuries. And sometimes, and in our age, it's happened to succeeded in taking over the hierarchy of the church. And other times in history, the Catholic Church was able to keep these forces and these people at bay. But right now, we're in a bad phase.
All right, fine. Well, we got Phil calling from Flint, Michigan. Did you have anything to say? What's the question for our guest tonight?
Yes, Dr. Stan. I would ask the guest if he had ever, in his research, come upon anything about a group in, I think it was France, the Cathars. The Cathars simply disagreed with the Roman Catholic doctrine and decided to form their own religious community and did so, and then whatever pope it was at that time sent out his private army, and they massacred all these people. Carl Sagan in Cosmos featured a segment where some lady astronomer, I think it was Alexandria, Greece, discovered that the Earth wasn't the center of the universe or the solar system, and that all the planets revolved around the sun. So the Pope of that time sent out his bishops to fillet her to the bone with abalone shells.
Well, but does this have anything to do with sexual abuse in the church?
Well, I'm just curious if the other question I had for him is it true that the Vatican is the second wealthiest nation state in the world?
All right, fine. What do you think? Is the Vatican the second wealthiest nation state in the world?
Well, the Vatican Bank is technically the largest non-profit corporation on earth. Harvard University is second, by the way, if you're interested. But in that sense, yes, the Roman Catholic Church controls vast wealth. It controls one-fourth of the world's gold supply. It can set gold prices. It owns a Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C., and it owns many seats on the New York Stock Exchange and the EU Stock Exchange. So they, I wouldn't know how to tally it up, but they certainly compare budget-wise with any superpower country as far as the money that goes through them. Now, the Catholic Charities do a lot of good work, and I don't want to demean them, but when you have a system that's protecting pedophile priests, the good that they do, it just kind of wilts because that becomes part of the smokescreen, too, to protect this, this inner core of child-abusing priests. Now, that's the problem with the Catholic Church. That's where it can become dangerous to everyone on this planet, in that it's so extensive. It goes to more countries than the UN or the World Health Organization. It has a strong presence in, major world capitals. And no other organization on earth, be it political or religious, has the same global scope as the Catholic Church, and none has the ability to move money between countries as quickly as the Roman Catholic Church. So if evil men take over the Roman Catholic Church, you have a very, very dangerous situation for everybody.
Okay, well, thanks so much for your call, Phil.
Thank you.
And I think, thank you for, a very objective answer. And I know that, as a loyal Catholic, it must be very difficult for you to have to talk about some of these things.
Well, certainly, a lot of my fellow Catholics, they live in Egypt. They live in denial, to make a little pun. But, facing this is a very liberating and spiritual experience. To know the truth, the metaphysical truth behind what's going on, even though that metaphysical truth is evil, is personally liberating, and it can only, in the long run, I believe, strengthen the church. This exposing of this ring of pedophile priests and bishops and cardinals in the long run can only help the lives of Roman Catholics. Now, accepting it and looking at it certainly is painful, but there's good pain, like when you go to the dentist.
Well, I'm always reminded of a story of my friend Ted Flynn tells. He's a faithful Catholic. When Napoleon told one of the cardinals he was going to destroy the Catholic Church, and the cardinal says, "You know, you're not going to." And Napoleon said, "I'm going to destroy it." And the cardinal said, "No, you won't. With all the corruption we've had and popes and cardinals, as corrupt as they've been, there's no way that you could possibly destroy the Catholic Church because God has preserved it through all the corruption." So, anyway, thanks very much, Phil, for your call, and we'll be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and I think we have Terry calling from Santa Cruz. Terry, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, do you have a question, comment for our guest?
Well, he mentioned earlier Paul Shandling, and I have read that he's one of the co-founders of NAMBLA.
Yes, that's true. I mentioned that earlier in the show.
Oh, you did? I'm sorry. I missed
the
earlier part.
He founded it in 1977 with a man named Tom Reeves at a conference in Boston called the Man Boy Love Conference, and Paul Shandling was the keynote speaker, Father Paul Shandling, sadly enough.
Okay, anything else, Terry?
Did you mention earlier, and have you heard that the psychologists are planning to take pedophilia off the DSM list of mental...
I heard they were going to take homosexuality off the list of diseases and make it a disease if you don't think homosexuality is normal. They're, again, a kind of psychiatric inversion, really.
Yeah, so you are going to be considered abnormal if we don't go along with it. Hey, we're just about out of time. Terry, we've got to run because we've got one more call coming in from Albany. Hi, Bob. Did you have a quick question? We're almost out of time.
Oh, yes, sir. I'm up here in Albany, New York, and we've had a situation up here with a Roman Catholic bishop who was accused of...
There was a murder.
Yes, there was a murder, supposedly, but it was supposedly, they said it was a suicide. This guy was investigated by Mary Jo White, the bishop.
That is before the law right now, and it's being investigated, so I wouldn't want to speak too much on that.
We're out of time, but Bob, the real problems in Christendom today, Christianity is under attack. But
that's
I appreciate so much your calling, but we got to go because we're out of time. Did you have a quick question?
Oh, yes. Also, I just wondered is, why isn't this bishop charged under the RICO Act for harboring pedophiles, committing sexual assault?
Because they really have to complete their investigation, don't they?
Yeah, they're in the midst of the investigation, so I wouldn't want to comment on that particular case at this moment.
Okay, but we got real problems, and who knows? This is a very vast movement all across America. It's about time people woke up and understood. Thanks so much for calling, Bob. And
thank
we're just about out of time. Thank you so very much for being with us. It's been a real pleasure, and you be sure you get your publisher to get in touch with me.
Sure will, and people can get it at williamhkennedy.com for now, but I will get those to you within the next week or two for your great listeners.
Great. Thanks so very much for being with us.
Very good, Dr. Stan. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye. God bless you. Okay, this is Dr. Stan. We'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up our program, at least the first hour of our program here at Radio Liberty, as we begin addressing the subjects that most people really don't want to cover. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course the book is Lucifer's Lodge, and hopefully we'll have them in a week or two. And if you want to get one, give us a call, and we'll get in touch with you as soon as we have them in, and we can get you the what they're going to come to. That's Lucifer's Lodge by William H. Kennedy, and I hope you enjoy the program. If you'd like to get a copy of the tape of this program or my other interview with William Kennedy, they are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. I do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, because that's how we're able to do what we do 5 hours every day as we reach out somewhere in America on radio, 5 hours every day on the internet, 4 hours every day on shortwave, and really not only in America, but throughout Europe and around the world. And then, of course, another four, now soon to be 5 hours on satellite. But it's an expensive proposition. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family and become part of our team, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. There's no way a nation can remain free if we can't reach the people with the truth. And you're certainly not going to get it because six major corporations control 95% of the media in the United States. And we can go over that some evening. That's very, very clever how they've done this. But if they can control the media, they can control what you hear, what you read, and what you see, and ultimately what you think. And unfortunately, these same great corporations have a tremendous influence on Christendom. They publish many of our Bibles. They publish our Bibles. They change our reality. So if you want to get into the background of what's going on, help us to, as we spread our influence across America, go to our website at radioliberty.com. There you can listen to our archives. You can listen to our programs live. You can learn about the other networks that we are on. You can pull down our newsletters. And, of course, we welcome you to copy those. You can look at the various products we carry because I think that they do help us to stay on the air. And as you're going to hear, if you stay with us this next hour, we're going to be talking about water fluoridation. And, well, you certainly don't want to be drinking fluoridated water, not if you care about yourself, your health, and your family. And we do have means of getting that fluoride out of the water. And you certainly do not want to victimize your family, as so many families are being victimized all across America. You'll find our next hour, our program with Jeff Green, will be fascinating. We hope many of you will give serious consideration to attending the meeting we're going to be putting on here on the 6th of November. It's going to be an all-day conference. Lunch is going to be served. It's going to be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course, and if you're out across America, you would like to know where to stay, we'll be glad to send you a list of hotels, and of course, very, very close to where this meeting is going to be held. We're bringing in outside speakers, and it's a good time's got to be had by all. We're hoping to have people from across the country, across the world, as we have in the past. So give us a call of 1-800-544-8927 if you can attend our all-day conference, which will be held at the Aptos Seascape Golf Course on the 6th of November. And then, of course, we hope if you have not read my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, you will get it, or I get the book, the video, and the audio tape together, known as the Brotherhood of Darkness Special. We encourage you to get the videos. They sold their souls for rock and roll, either the 4-hour or the 10-hour version, because I think it will help to bring into stark relief what we're talking about, the true nature of this this demonic, satanic movement we're against. Because as you watch these videos, you'll hear the rock stars singing about Aleister Crowley. Who was he? He was a Satanist. And, of course, they will tell how they sold their souls to the devil. And I believe there are people at the highest echelons of our government, at the highest echelons of international finance, and who today have sold their souls to the devil. They've been well rewarded, but of course they'll spend their eternity in hell. Because we don't talk about hell much anymore. Instead, we have a 4-tape set on Whatever Happened to Hell. I think you would want to hear that, and so many of the other tape sets we have, which will discuss the issues that everybody should be discussing. It isn't pray for America, pray for revival, and pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And so, if you're leaving us now, may the Lord be with you, and we'll be with you again on Monday. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us in the line, Mr. Jeff Green from the organization dedicated to bringing out the truth about the water fluoridation. And we're going to be talking about something happening here in California. Although it's a California legislation, it affects everybody in the country because California is the sixth largest economy in the entire world. The largest economy is the United States. The second largest economy is Japan. Third largest economy is varies between China and Germany. Then you get down to Great Britain. And then the sixth largest economy is good old United States of America. So I should say the state of California. So what happens in California does make a difference for the rest of the world. And for the, certainly for the rest of the country. Well, they are intent upon fluoridating the water here forcibly. And a lot of communities don't want to do that. And my community and adjacent communities, why the people have voted, they don't want their water fluoridated. But you see, there are people who want to fluoridate the water. They don't care what the people want. They don't care what's really healthy for the people. They do not care about the damage that water fluoridation does, or the metal changes, or the other dramatic consequences in the way of the decreasing fertility and lowering testosterone levels, and of course creating attacks on the endocrine system and on the bones of the people. They're really not concerned about that. They're going to fluoridate the water. And so they've come up with a clever scheme, and I'm going to let Jeff tell us a little bit about how they've done this. You see, this has to be very important. They violated all the rules and all the regulations here in California to get this legislation through, and they've got it through, and my understanding is it's gone to Governor Schwarzenegger's desk. So, Jeff, why don't you introduce yourself, tell our listeners about what's going on, and then, of course, what you hope at least the people here in California will do, and why we've got a problem.
Yes, well, certainly. My name is Jeff Green, and I'm the National Director for Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. And unfortunately, what's happened in the state of California is that we've rejected fluoridation more than 100 times in California, and in 1995 the state legislature decided that they would move ahead and actually forced communities to begin to fluoridate. It was a conditional arrangement where, because they really didn't have that much of a support to move forward, they created a situation which was conditioned on the fact that some third party would come forward and put the money up so that they could fluoridate. In other words, they created a law that said that cities could not be compelled to fluoridate using ratepayers or taxpayer funds unless some magical entity would come forward and have enough money to pay for all this. Well, as you might guess, some money started showing up. And, you know, where it comes from, obviously somebody has to question, but in essence, what's happened now is that we've been successful in California at being able to stop some of this from moving forward by addressing the issue of what's in the actual substance that they end up putting in the water. Fluoride, kind of the word fluoride, has been kind of what you would call basically a generic term. However, what's happened is that the substance that they end up putting in the water is a toxic waste that comes from the phosphate fertilizer.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Jeff, please.
Yep.
Wow. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeff Green from Citizens for Safe Drinking Water, and we're talking about the fact that they are putting in the water here in California and really all across the country the toxic waste from the fertilizer industry, which is so toxic, it's extremely expensive to dispose of this, in the ground and to find any dump where you can put this where it won't get into the groundwater. So they've come up with a wonderful solution. This toxic, poisonous substance is they're putting in our drinking water. And it contains arsenic, it contains fluoride, it contains lead, it contains all sorts of things. And they're putting in our drinking water on one hand, and then the EPA is saying, oh, arsenic, terrible, terrible threat, we've just got to get it out of the drinking water. But the EPA won't stand up against this because, of course, tremendous political pressure has been brought to bear, and we can talk about that a little bit later, why the government agencies are all knuckling under. After all, when you work for the government, you go along with the system, or you get fired, and you lose your salary, you lose your pension, you lose your health care. Are you going to speak up and do what's right, or are you going to go along with the flow? And tragically, most people do. There's some people in the EPA, the scientists there, who've had the courage to speak up and put the information out. But amazingly enough, Rush Limbaugh and Bill O'Reilly and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw have never told us what the scientists at the EPA, who risked their reputations and risked their jobs and risked their pensions, what they have said about the danger of water fluoridation. So you pick up the story there, Jeff.
Well, the amazing aspect of this is what they call a gut and amend kind of a thing, and you need to be aware of this all across the entire nation, because this is more and more what happens. In the old days, we used to think about the fact that bills were, you know, we were trying to basically throw things in at us that we have no opportunity to respond to, would be put in this big, what they used to call omnibus bills, where, you know, you couldn't see it because it was so big that you just couldn't find it. These are flat-out gut and amends, where they take a bill that didn't pass it some other way. They strip out all the words that were there before, and they just create a brand new thing. And then instead of having any notice where there's any opportunity for the citizenry to respond, they stick it in, and they put waiver after waiver on there so that nobody can address the issue, in essence.
Now, this bill that they've taken had nothing to do with water fluoridation to begin with, did it?
No, it was an appropriation bill that had to do with the state having to respond to, you know, claims that were made against them and trying to put up enough money to be able to respond to all that. Had
so
nothing to do with it at all.
What they did is they took out everything but the number, and then they gutted it, and then they made a new amendment to it, which was the water fluoridation bill that they wanted to get through, a compulsory water fluoridation, which would override the will of the people of the state of California. Hold on. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Jeff Green for Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. And so pick up the story. There's a gut and amend legislation. They took a bill, had it to do with appropriations, and they took everything out of the bill, and at the last minute, they submitted this as a water fluoridation bill, and they snuck it through so there could be no discussion, so nobody would know what they were doing. And, of course, what you're dealing with are people in our state legislature who do not want the citizenry of our state of California to know what they're doing. Now, people across America say, well, that's California's problem, that's not ours. But believe me, if they can get away with it here, in the sixth largest economy in the entire world, they're going to be able to do it in your community, too. And you're going to be having to worry about the fluoridation of your water and the poisoning of it with arsenic and lead and all these other things. So pick up the story, Jeff.
Well, the amazing aspect of this is that, having done this already, it made it through both sections of the legislature, both the Assembly and the Senate. It now is going to the governor to be able to either sign or veto.
Now, how long did it take to get through both houses?
Well, actually, in California, they're supposed to have 30 days for the public to review it, so you have some opportunity to respond. And then you're supposed to have at least a couple of days before any particular committee hearing, even though that's way too short for most people, so that you can respond as well. Instead, what happened is they put it up like on a Thursday, the following Monday, where, you know, people didn't have an ability to respond on a Monday, moved it through, you know, two houses, and never even displayed the opposition that we already presented to it, even though we ourselves were able to respond. But the normal public was not able to, in fact, including cities and so forth, didn't have any opportunity to respond in between at all. So it was just done and over with, and some people would say within 3 days. By the time it moved through the Assembly, they had a vote, It went over to the Senate side and just moved all the way through, and now it's already up to the governor already. So it jumped through so fast that the majority of people had no opportunity to respond. So just on the get and amend principle all by itself, this is a distortion of all kind of legislation, obviously.
But somebody doesn't care about the law. Somebody doesn't care about representative government. Somebody has an agenda. Some very powerful people want to put this this substance into our drinking water.
Well, there's no doubt about that. And what this was, by the way, was an amendment to try to prevent the processes that have already been going on with the cities from blocking fluoridation. Back in 1995, when the state legislature was convinced that this was a good idea to put it through, but they just didn't have enough strength to be able to force ratepayers and taxpayers to be able to pay. This amendment is intended to lock it down so that now ratepayers and taxpayers have to pay through what they call an unfunded mandate, that the government is going to tell them what they ought to do. They're going to control the local water authorities' ability to be able to make certain that things like arsenic and lead and cadmium and mercury are not a part of the of the additions to their water supply.
But they are, aren't they?
Well, they are. In fact, the hydrofluosylicic acid, a big name basically for most people, but the acid that they're intending to place in the water in order to fluoridate is the largest contributor of arsenic of all the water additives that are available. And for some communities, what that means is the addition of the additional arsenic that's going to end up because of the fluoridation chemical will throw them above the level that they can continue to supply water with arsenic in it. This is not a pharmaceutical or a toothpaste type of grade of fluoride that they're placing in the water. This is a substance that comes from the phosphate fertilizer industry out of Central Florida that it contains contaminants that come from the mining operation depending upon what day it is.
Well, of course, the thing is that even if it were a pure fluoride, you wouldn't want it, but this is not even just pure fluoride, which is bad. This is even worse, isn't it?
Well, it certainly is, and certainly there's good reason to be worried about fluoride all by itself, but when, they've just finally, after 50 years, finally come to new numbers now that finally reduce the amount of arsenic that's in the water and force everybody to correct that, they're now talking about a substance that can add, just on the arsenic part, forgetting the fluoride for a minute, the arsenic part, that can create as much as one bladder cancer or lung cancer per 1,000 people in the population. Now, this is a lifetime kind of a thing, but one bladder cancer or lung cancer per 1,000 people just because of the fluoride product is contaminated. Now, Dr. Stan, you and I both know that fluoride by itself has got tremendous impact. But this is a contaminated product that is even worse than what we would say, even from a pharmaceutical standpoint.
Yeah, of course, there's evidence that fluoride itself actually produces cancers as well. Now, what about the lead? Is there lead in this product as well?
There's lead in the product, but as we've talked about before, the amazing part about fluoride is that it especially the hydrofluosylicic acid, is that it's a tremendous, what they call, transport. It actually transports heavy metals like lead, like aluminum, like some of these other heavy metals to places in the body that they could not normally get all by themselves. The laboratory studies that show especially aluminum finding their way into the brain in a place in which they would normally would not be there. When you have aluminum fluoride in combination, all of a sudden you have a doubling of the incidence of the aluminum that's in the brain when fluoride's present. When you have lead that could be available from housing projects, it could be available from almost any other source, but all of a sudden there's a combination of this hydrofluosylicic acid in the water, you have a doubling of the incidence of lead in children's blood. And for those people who follow that issue at all, lead in children's blood is directly related to aberrant behavior like violence, those kind of things, but it's also related to what some people call ADHD or ADD, meaning that there's hyperactivity and other difficulties, and especially lower IQs in children as well. So this addition is not a minor aspect. It's not something that people can walk away from without addressing the fact that socially, from a social responsibility, we've got some serious problems when this is added to the water.
No, doesn't the fluoride actually help to get the aluminum into the brain as well? In other words, they put aluminum in the water to clear it, and so isn't the aluminum being added to our drinking water as a normal process, and now the fluoride will help it to get into the body and into the sensitive areas even more efficiently?
Right. Now, one aspect of it is the fact that they put aluminum in the water for what they call turbidity, which means that they're going to bring all of these smaller elements together and make it easier for them to filter out supposedly the, you know, some of the substances in the water. But when the aluminum is in the water, it's combined with that. But remember that there's aluminum, a lot of other things that are just as easy for it to combine with. A lot of people are still continuing to use deodorants, or antiperspirants, in which they're aluminum based as well. And so it honestly doesn't matter where the aluminum is coming from. When it finds its way into your bloodstream and it combines with fluoride, it now combines together and is able to be transported to the brain, just like we talked about.
And there's a definite relationship between certainly the Alzheimer's disease and certainly both mercury and Alzheimer's disease have been incriminated. Mercury and aluminum have been incriminated in the formation of Alzheimer's disease.
Well, in fact, the laboratory studies that they showed with aluminum fluoride, for an example, it didn't even have to have high levels, high concentrations of fluoride. That when you had 50, that's 50 parts per million of aluminum fluoride in the brain, in the water, and then you changed it from, you know, to 0.5, 100 times less of aluminum fluoride, it delivered double the amount of aluminum fluoride to the brain. And what they ended up having was lesions that were the same as. Now, laboratory animals don't get Alzheimer's, or at least we don't describe it that way. But in this particular case, the same lesions that were formed in the brain as people who have Alzheimer's. The problem with the study, this is amazing, the problem with the study is they couldn't tell what was worse. The kidney damage that made the laboratory animals die, or the lesions in the brain. Their difficulty was they couldn't figure out which one was making the other side worse. I don't care which one made the other side worse. Neither one of the circumstances were happening with the control animals that weren't getting that kind of exposure.
Well, now, what is going to happen? The legislation has been jammed through both houses, the legislature in California, and I believe it illegally, but it's going towards the governor's desk. What are the chances that the governor, who is so concerned about the children, everything is about the children, what's he going to do?
Well, this is a huge test, obviously, at least for those of us who are watching who understand enough about the issue. Governor Schwarzenegger has made it a commitment previously that these Gutten amends, which were specifically intended to avoid public discussion, avoid the ability for people to respond to the situation at all, that he made a commitment that when there is a Gutten amend situation like this, that he would veto that and prevent that from moving forward. In our legislature, in California, one party supersedes the other or overwhelms the other one by a fairly large margin. So in the past, when we had a previous governor, which a lot of people remember was ousted from California, it would have been natural for them to just rubber stamp it. But in this case, Governor Schwarzenegger probably needs to hear from individuals, even all across the country, and have them let them know that this is not a realistic way to legislate, but also that to take away the issue from the local, community to determine what kind of quality of water they're going to have and whether they're going to be medicated or not, needs to come back to that part. And so we're in hopes that people will respond all across the United States, but especially in California, and let them know that there's just not any way that this is acceptable, and that we expect him to be the person that he stood up and said that he is.
Now, how would people get in touch with the governor, and what would they tell him? Would they say veto SB 96? Is that the number, SB 96?
Exactly. Now, there are a number of different ways to be able to reach him. A lot of them are more difficult to get to than some other ones. But he has fax numbers that are really highly important for you to be able to contact him as well.
All right, we're going to let you get those out in just a moment.
Sure.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Jeff Green of Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. We're talking about the legislation that has gone through in Sacramento, SB 96. That's SB for Senate Bill 96. And, of course, this is a gut and amend bill. But what it does is simply take away the right of people to determine whether they want to have fluoride and lead and arsenic and all the other toxic materials in their drinking water. Over 100 local communities have said, we don't want this. They voted against it. But the elite and the people who are funding them with large sums of money, because I'm sure there are large amounts of money going into getting this thing through. After all, the fertilizer industry's got an awful lot of this they've got to dispose of. And if the American people ever understood what this is all about, why, think of the lawsuits that could be brought against the fertilizer industry. So they've got to maintain this facade. They even have staffs of lawyers. They call them the fluoride lawyers. And they have, this is discussed in Chris Bryson's book, The Fluoride Deception. Incidentally, we will be carrying that book, The Fluoride Deception by Chris Bryson. And we have some interviews with him if you'd like to get copies of those. And we go into the background, really, of the fact that these lawyers, they have all sorts of scientific studies that show how dangerous the fluoride is, and these have never been published. They've been suppressed. They do everything they can. They get together. They have whole programs on how they're going to protect the fluoride industry that's literally poisoning people all across America. Fascinating book, fascinating insight into that. So here's a chance, an issue that is winnable. It would be fascinating. It would be very heartening if the good governor of the state of California, Arnold, would go ahead and veto this. Would you like to get your fax number out now? And we'll want to get it out several times more later this evening, because some of our stations aren't listening right now. But why don't you go ahead and give that fax number?
Yes, Dr. Stan, let me first of all give you an email address, because people, that may be quicker for some people. First of all, those are the people who have email. This is a real quick one. It's www.gov, like gov, M-A-I-L, all one word, G-O-V-M-A-I-L, .ca, standing for California, .gov, standing for government. So it's G-O-V-M-A-I-L.ca.gov. That's the email address where you can actually direct this. It, you know, a box pops up so that you can tell the governor what you think about all this. A telephone number, which you can call also, and you can leave a message if that's easier for you. They report it as being a number of someone who's, you know, basically against it. But 916-445-2841. 916-445-2841. Now, there's also a fax number, and the problem is that it's so busy all the time that you have to really hang in there, because evidently it's on. It's just that there's lots of people talking to them. The fax number is 916-445-4633. 916-445-4633. Any way that you can communicate to the governor and let him know that, first of all, that you, you're not accepting this, the process of government, the way that it's moved through, so that the, you know, that the issue cannot stand the light. You know, I mean, this is really the point behind it. There's so much information that this legislature would have had to look at and couldn't have possibly come to this determination if that information was placed, you know, right in front of them. And the second part is, why in the world would anybody take away the local community's ability to be able to control the quality of their own water?
Hold that thought for just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Jeff Green, who is with he's the National Director of Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. And we'll be, of course, giving this information out, but let me put it out right now. If you'd like to email the governor, it's www.govmail, M-A-I-L, that's www.govmail.ca.gov. There's no www in front of that, is there?
Well, it's the...
It's just govmail.ca.gov.
Yeah, it's got a www in front of it.
It does have a www.
This is a website.
That's a website. How do we email him?
Well, you go onto that website, and then you click on it, and it has an automatic email right directly to the governor.
Okay, fine. So you go there, and there's a site for an email on that website. Okay.
Right.
All right, fine. And then give those telephone numbers again. What's the governor's telephone number?
Telephone number, and this is one in which you get to leave your message on there, is 916-445-2841.
And the fax number?
And the fax number, 916-445-4633.
Now, of course, anybody across the country can go ahead and send this in, and don't be bashful. We need to get all the pressure on Arnold that we possibly can to see if he's really concerned about the children, or if he's really concerned about these gutting men bills, or if it's all simply smoke and mirrors to make the people think that he's going to represent them. So that's going to be very interesting to see what sort of response we get. If the governor does actually sign this, what can be done? Can we start a state initiative to get the information to the people and use that educationally and to embarrass the legislature?
Well, we can. We attempted to do that almost 6 years ago, and in California that means really a tremendous contribution from people, because you have to have almost $1 million to begin it, and you have to have probably another $20 million to win it, to put it up. We attempted to do that back in 1996-97. However, what we see is probably a lawsuit that would go after him for this, and we obviously would look for people who are willing to contribute to that. California, as you mentioned earlier, is a leading edge on all of this. The incidence of people rejecting fluoridation throughout California has been a leader throughout the whole United States. And the fact that they would attempt to just slam dunk this, some people would call it the finest legislature that money can buy, I have to accentuate the buy part of it, because this legislation that they just passed right now is so egregious, so terrible, so ugly, that it wouldn't make any difference if it was about fluoride or not. Everybody would look at it and realize that it's really distorted. This is not good legislation no matter what happens.
Well, who do you think is putting up the money? Is there any way to track the money?
Well, we do know that we have actually being minutes of meetings that happened when the fluoridation promoters met some 10 years before 1995, deciding that they were going to fluoridate, in which Cargill, C-A-R-G-I-L-L, the largest family-owned corporation in America, who is the phosphate fertilizer industries down in Central Florida, had said that they would offer and put up the money for all of the equipment, the capital equipment, to get this thing rolling across the entire state. At that time, they anticipated $45 million in the legislature, but everybody else knew it was going to cost a couple hundred million. But they don't have any difficulty of putting the money up, what I call a bait-and-switch kind of a thing, where they will put up the money for the equipment, but then everybody else has to pay for the, for the chemicals, for the toxic sludge, for the rest of their lives.
Well, now, of course, is there any way to sue Cargill for this and bring a lawsuit against them for this and really go after them almost on a RICO basis, because this is a criminal activity in my estimation?
Well, there is at a certain point. The difficulty is you have to go through the first step of being able to show that the people who are putting it in the water because they're the ones that are actually taking the action. In fact, one of our difficulties in lawsuits has been in the past that the public policy of fluoridation, where someone says, I think it's a great idea to mass medicate somebody and put something in the water, is not something that you can go in and easily stop. Instead, you have to directly address the substance that's going to be placed in the water. In other words, there's a truck that's going to leave from Central Florida, and in that truck is going to be some junk, some toxic sludge. And that's what you have to deal with to begin with, is the fact that a city, and that's where most of their protection has been, or some other water district is doing that to us. So our first steps are to basically sue and file lawsuits against the people who are actually putting it in the water. Once we've accomplished that and shown that it's harmful, then we get to go back out on the RICO, just exactly like you said, and we should be going after the American Dental Association, too, for supporting all this.
And I think that if you want to get the facts on this, you need to go to two websites. One of them is keepersofthewell.org. That's keepers, not keeper, but keepersofthewell.org. And the other is fluoridealert.org. You read the things on those two websites, and then if you're not concerned, why, of course, you shouldn't even be listening to our programs. Two great websites. They're both available. And that's keepersofthewell.org and, of course, fluoridealert.org. Go to both websites as soon as you can. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Jeff Green. Our telephone number out across America, 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. It's very difficult for the average person to believe that anybody would put anything into the drinking water that would be harmful to people or be harmful to children. But I think it's so important that people have to understand there are people out there with a different agenda. In fact, one of the interesting things I just got from Maureen Jones, and I was reading it this morning, is an article that appeared in Family Planning Perspective, a magazine that's put out by an organization affiliated with Planned Parenthood. It was put out in 1970. And they talked about their plan for population control. How were they going to get population control? Why they were going to have a marriage tax, so it would be a more important to, it would cost you more to be married, it would be taxed at a higher rate than you would be if you were not married. So I've always wondered why they didn't repeal the marriage tax. It didn't seem logical. There was always reasons given, but when you read this plan, it's all there. Anybody wants to see a page out of the magazine, it's there. They wanted to put something in the water to discourage fertility. Well, that's what fluoride does. It cuts down on fertility. They wanted to encourage homosexuality. Why? Why? Because homosexuals don't marry and don't have children ordinarily. And then, of course, they wanted to encourage abortion and euthanasia and all of these things. Remember, this was before Roe versus Wade. Everything that's going on is part of a long-range plan. It's amazing, as you read that, 1970, put something in the water that will decrease fertility. Well, the studies are there, Freddie's studies, and we have those studies showing that if you put water you put the fluoride in the water in communities, and you check the fertility rates, why the higher the fluoride, the lower the fertility, lower the fluoride, the higher the fertility rates in communities. And, of course, we have Indian studies that show it affects the testosterone in the male and, of course, the health of the sperm. All of this is well known except by the American people. Probably there's no group of people in the entire world who understands less about the danger of dangers of fluoridation of water than the American people. And our job, and I'm sure this is Jeff's job as well, is to get the American people to understand what's really going on. To understand that if you're really concerned about your children, if you're concerned about your health, if you're concerned about postmenopausal women, because of course there's almost a doubling of hip fractures in postmenopausal women. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and we were just talking about some of the problems with of course, water fluoridation. Our guest this evening is Jeff Green from the Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. And our telephone number, of course, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And we've got a caller from Santa Cruz area. Neil is calling. Hi, Neil. Did you have a question or comment?
Yes, Dr. Stan. Thank you very much. I do appreciate your show, and I really think it's important that people are informed about things like this. I was going to ask you, taking it a step further, because I believe this, do you think that the fluoride's being put in the water deliberately to shorten people's lifespan so more money can be accessed by the government of our social security funds?
Well, let's ask Jeff Green. Neil is calling from Santa Cruz, and he's wondering, do you think that they're putting this in deliberately to harm the people? Or do you think they just... what are your thoughts, Jeff?
Well, you know, it's always hard to be able to determine motivations. It's kind of looking at, you know, the people who showed up on the panel... they were talking about smoking and whether or not it caused cancer. You know, some of these people were so adamant about the fact that they didn't have any evidence of it, and then you find out all the memos behind it said they knew all along, and they had children that were smoking that were getting cancer right along with themselves. And so I have to look more about the facts rather than the motivation, because I don't know always how to judge that. What I do know is this, that it certainly interferes with the endocrine system. It interferes with thyroxine production, which means we have problems with the thyroid. It interferes with insulin production, which basically means we have problems with diabetes. It interferes with serotonin production, which means we have all kinds of difficulties that have to do with you know, our brains and our messages that direction. It interferes with white cell migration. They call it leukocyte migration, white cells moving from one site or another site to the body. When you start adding all these things together, including hip fractures, including cancers, which eventually lead to death, when you start looking at bone pathologies and those kind of things, the one thing you have to say for certain, regardless of the motivation, these certainly are certainly happening that way. There isn't any doubt the fact that, it intrudes upon healthy living, and there are a lot of people, and I can't fault them with the fact that says that whether it kills them immediately, what it certainly does is it puts you right in direct line with having to spend a ton of money and a large part of your life having to deal with your health issues. And there are certainly a lot of people who say, how can you stand up and fight? How can you stand up for yourself? How can you, take care of yourself if you're constantly in this situation where you're having to deal with your health?
Jeff, don't you think that it's rather suspicious that we've known about fluoride? I understand the original Dental Society in the U.S. opposed fluoride. And we've known about its dangers for a long, long time. And yet, it seems like it's been ignored for a long, long time. Why is that?
Well, we certainly have a sense of the fact that, if you had to go back and you had to look at the original, prompting for it, we now go back and we see that the original prompting from at least the declassified documents, and especially as Chris Bryson in his book, The Fluoride Deception, relates to people, that a major impact on whether this was going to move forward in the United States had to do with the Manhattan Project and the fact that fluoride was the magical ingredient, the uranium hexafluoride that separated uranium isotopes and made the bomb. And we also secondarily came to the understanding that the reason why this was so important for people to project to, or excuse me, the government to project to people that this was really great, was in protection of liabilities. Then we go another step and you start realizing that the fluoride is so useful, positively useful in industry as breaking down molecular bonds, creating brand new molecular bonds and so forth, that you become almost surrounded from all these different motivations. So in terms of whether someone's in control of that specific aspect or not, there is no doubt that there's some kind of contrivance, if you want to call it that anyway, and that for an example, we've had a congressional investigation on fluoride. It happened from 1998 to 2000. Very specific questions and answers that came from the House Committee on Science. No newspaper, as far as we know, in the entire country, other than, actually, I shouldn't say that. One of them did the connection in the Santa Cruz area. But other than that, daily newspapers, not one newspaper in the entire United States covered the fact that these answers that came back from our what we call protective agencies, they flat out said they don't know anything about the hydrofluorosilicic acid they put in the water, that the EPA is no longer in charge of water additives, that there hasn't been the certifications that come out so they can be placed in the water, have never, what you need to comply to has never been complied to. The information is just amazing. And so it's hard not to come to the idea that there's a lot of people who know about this and there's some kind of a conspiracy that goes along with it. On the other hand, just the straight-up facts are enough for me.
And I think that the one thing is, Neil, I think there are many, many people with many different agendas. I think that many of the dentists are very sincere. They want to help the children and prevent cavities. They honestly believe that they're doing good. I think the pediatricians who are prescribing the fluoride to children honestly believe they're doing good. Now, they're actually doing harm, and many of them are still giving the fluoride pills to infants, when, of course, even the American Pediatric Association and I believe the American Dental Association have both said no child from birth to at least 6 months of age should be given any fluoride, and then from 6 months to 3 years of age, not more than the fluoride in one cup of water with one part per million. That's all they should get because our children are getting fluorosis. They're getting the mottled teeth. Almost, 30-40% of the children have at least one mottled tooth from a fluoride intoxication. Is that right, Jeff?
Well, actually, when you look at one tooth, it's 66.4% of the children in fluoridated communities now show the display that they've gotten way, way, way too much fluoride. And, Dr. Stan, when you talk about this, you have to understand that people who read about this or people who learn about this, imagine the difficulty they have of controlling this. When you have a child that's between 6 months and 3 years of age, and the new recommendation is because fluoride and all these other foods, you know, basically Coca-Cola and Minute Maid orange juice and produce like potatoes and tomatoes and lettuce, especially what we call head lettuce, and raisins and grapes and so forth. When you look at all these different exposures, they came to the determination that there was so much that children should be slowed down. So if you're in, let's say where I'm in San Diego where we're not fluoridated, or in Santa Cruz, no doctor can prescribe as much fluoride as is going to be put in the water. So when you look at that, and, and let's say a parent looks at this information, and they say, okay, I'd like to protect my child now. I don't need to be overdosing him on this. So you get a child that's up to 3 years of age. Let's say they're 2.5 years of age, and you got a five-year-old. They're supposed to be controlling how much these children drink of water. Where in the world and when in the world do we ever come up with a process, a public policy, where we're supposed to tell children not to drink enough, you know, that much water? That, by the way, you've had too much right now. You can't drink any more of that water today. And then you're going to control it differently from one age than another. So a seven-year-old, go ahead and drink the water right now because you don't have those specialized cells in your teeth any longer, and so I don't have to think about that at all, which is crazy. But at the same time, we're supposed to control all these at different levels. I mean, that's an insanity all by itself.
But, Neil, I think that there are some people who really want to put something in the drinking water to the control fertility. I think that there's a very small number of people, but I think they're very, very powerful, and there are very powerful forces behind them. Do you have anything else you'd like to ask?
Well, I was going to mention it also is used to make people docile. They give it to prisoners in Russia, I understand.
Have you ever heard that that it does have some effect on the mind, Jeff?
Well, we have, and I guess there's certain things. One of them is recognizing what did happen and what was placed in the water and how Russia used it, as well as, their intention of using it for Afghanistan. But I think a more current proof of that is to be able to see that when they placed fluoride in the water of laboratory animals, if they were exposed to fluoride during what we call a gestation period, during, pre-birth, that there were the laboratory animals came out as basically hyperactive, so that they had the same kind of problems that we see with children right now, in which they just couldn't slow themselves down, and this was permanent, and then it was going to go on and on. However, if you were exposed to that same fluoride in even the same amounts during an adult life of a laboratory animal anyway, then they became the rat version of couch potato. So even though we could probably look back and try to look at the motivations previously and what that was used for and why they did it and the rest, we do know that's the way it works on laboratory animals right this second.
Now, did you say that they were thinking about using this in Afghanistan?
Well, in fact, that was one of the considerations, was Russia being able to use it in Afghanistan, because as many people may realize, when you're sick all the time, you don't feel like standing up and fighting anybody at all.
You're talking about now during the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan.
Right, and exactly. In fact, one of the books that came out that was written by a person by the name of John Yamianis, which I know that you had in your program at least a long time ago, if not currently. He died about 2 years ago now. What happened was that he wrote a book called Fluoride, the Aging Factor. And on the picture of his book, it was people who were in Turkey who were exposed to high levels of fluoride in their water, not because anybody was trying to do anything to them, but just high levels of fluoride in the water. And these people look like they're 70 years old when, in fact, they were in their late 20s and early 30s. They became so dysfunctional that they couldn't hold jobs because their bones were too brittle, because their bodies, their connective tissues were too brittle, because their whole bodies could hardly respond to normal living. Now, fortunately, we have better nutrition than that. We don't have the same, high concentrations, but certainly that's what was happening.
Okay. Is there anything? Is that book still available? Dr. Yamiatis's book.
It's hard to find right this second, and I apologize to you right now, Dr. Stan, for not being able to have a ready source for that. You may be able to find it on eBay and so forth. We don't have a ready source for it right this second because of his recent passing away.
All right, fine. Well, we did have him. In fact, I just saw his name up on my list, and I was thinking possibly of getting back on again. I'm so sorry that he did pass away, because he was a very nice gentleman. We have a little cartoon that my wife has cut out, and it shows these two women. Obviously, they're in Afghanistan. They're wearing the burqas. It shows the landscape behind them. It just sort of looks like the moon. Everything's destroyed. There's one a lonely, sort of scrawny-looking donkey, and one woman is saying to the other, "Well, at least they don't fluoridate our water here." So, of course, but obviously somebody was thinking of that at one time. Anything else, Neil?
I just wanted to make sure I had the URL for the website correct. That was www. Was that a D as a dog?
No, G O V G O V mail.
.ca.gov.
Right.
And the fax number was 916-445-4623.
4633.
33, okay. I'm glad I got that. And the phone number is 916-445-2841.
You got it.
Okay, well, thank you, Dr. Stan, and thank you, Jeff.
And if I could suggest, Neil, go to those websites, keepersofthewell.org and fluoridealert.org. You'll find information there. You need to get it. You need to copy it. You need to get it out. And we're thinking about putting together a syllabus on this, make it available for you. Anyway, thanks so much for calling.
I'll go to those websites right away.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And, of course, it's up to you out there in the listening audience to get the information. Jeff has done a great job of getting this together, and so has the gentleman who put together the Fluoride Alert website. There's two excellent websites, all sorts of documentation there, and right now we've got Terry calling. Hi, Terry. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Fine. I just typed in a little search on the internet, and I typed in IG-4 and fluoride. They seem to be the inventors of it, and goes into detail about how it was used in Nazi concentration camps.
Does it talk about how it was given to sedate the people?
Yes, exactly.
All right, fine. That's fascinating, and I've heard that. I'm glad to know we can actually document that.
And I've done other reading about it, and it seems to be that was their intention. That's what they were looking for to begin with. And also, I wanted to ask your guest. Now, I've heard from a few locations. I've read some things about it, and I've been alerted to the fact that Prozac, which is fluoxetine based, which is a fluoride product, is now showing up in the groundwater since it doesn't break down, especially from Washington State where they use sewage sludge on food crops. And your guest was talking about how fluoride is also showing up in vegetables and food. And I was just thinking, well, so we've got a double whammy going on with the Prozac fluoxetine showing up in our food supply. So they're going to get us one way or the other, it seems like.
Well, would you want to comment on that, Jeff? And would you mind commenting on what they found up in Washington about the fluoride from the water getting into the streams and getting into the fish? Would you like to cover address Terry's question and then the fish question?
Sure. First of all, certainly Prozac and a lot of the other what we call psychotropic drugs that are intended for us to change and alter our moods and our, you know, our responsive emotions and so forth, are typically fluoride-based. Many of them because they interfere with the what we call the serotonin connection. The serotonin is the chemical that It sends a signal from one neuron to another, meaning that we're talking about brain chemistry here. And in that sense, Prozac plays an important role in terms of what's happening, because as you have read in the news, I mean, now decided they're going to give this to children as well. And so one of the things we've seen is, especially with things that down here in San Diego where I happen to live, but also over in Florida and so forth, they've come up with these great ideas to have what they call toilet to tap, where they can actually take sewage and sludge and turn around and clean it all up and then make people drink it. Now, usually they take it from a fairly affluent area and then send it to a fairly indigent area to do that. Now, they've been able to show that they can actually clean the water up pretty well, but what they haven't been able to do is to deal with the pharmaceuticals in which we're talking about sometimes parts per billion and parts per trillion, in which they just don't have any method to be able to clean up the water to that extent where they can take care of that. And so certainly that's a tremendous impact that we have to be concerned about. what he was also talking about when we were talking earlier about the fluoride that's in foods. Some portions of that are in the foods are because of the fact that some plants will take it up through the root system, especially the camellia plant, which is is the kind of plant that we use for black teas and green teas. However, most of the produce problem with fluoride is not because of that, because most plants are smarter and they won't take it up through the root system. Instead, what happens is we see it as a pesticide residue. And this is a really nasty one. It's typically sodium, aluminum, and fluoride. So we go back to that combination we were talking about earlier, where we've got aluminum and fluoride being combined together, and certainly that's what ends up there. And when you let those kind of things go back out in fresh water, they start affecting salmonid, is the way they describe it, which is salmon and trouts, fish that typically go from salt water into fresh water, and they have to convert their salt and so forth in a certain way. And all of a sudden now they die off. They cannot spawn. They cannot make it up to the spawning part any longer. And
where are the environmentalists when we need them?
Well,
oh, that was another question I wanted to ask.
Hold on, Terry. We'll be back in just a moment. You hang on. Okay, well, this is Dr. Stan, the final segment of our program this evening. Terry, you had another question you wanted to ask?
Well, yeah, why not attack this problem through the EPA?
pardon me for laughing, but why don't you explain to them why we don't attack this program or problem through the EPA?
Well, the amazing part about the Environmental Protection Agency as well as the Food and Drug Administration is that most people realize that both of those agencies were created, although there have been some great things that have happened from both those agencies. On the other hand, in some ways, they were intended to protect industry and keep the Congress from having to deal with some of the problems directly. The union that represents all of the scientists at EPA headquarters in Washington, D.C., became our scientific sponsor in 1997. They came out with information that showed, in this particular case about fluoride, that the information shows that there are bone pathologies, there are serious problems, adverse health effects, and they enumerated them to make it really, really clear. However, they're also really clear about the fact that their job is to do the risk assessments, in other words, identify the scientific information in such a way that the agency can make public policy. But what's happened is that they've been hijacked by industry or hijacked by their own agendas, whichever it is. And our problem is when you go to the EPA, in fact, if you were to call up right now and ask them, questions about it, many of them would tell you, well, there's nothing real problem with this. I don't even understand what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The union, however, has taken a position along with us that states very, very, very clearly that there should be a moratorium on all fluoridation right now.
And, of course, if you will go to the website, fluoridealert.org, and you'll actually find that letter, that statement, by the very, very long one, by the union of EPA scientists. And you'll find a short version of that on Jeff's Keepers of the Wells, keepersofthewell.org website. Hey, we're out of time, Terry. Thank you so much for calling. And Jeff, I want to thank you so very much for being with us this evening. Again, our guest has been Jeff Green, who's the National Director of the Citizens for Safe Drinking Water. Jeff, do you have a quick parting thought for our listeners?
Well, I guess the one thing that everybody should recognize that we're in an age right now which says that if you don't stand up for it, it's not going to happen. Water is the most precious element that any of us can possibly ask for, look for, or need in order for our bodies to survive. That for some reason, they've decided that they want to utilize the water as a delivery system. As Dr. Stan has presented to you, that many of these reasons may not be up and up at all. But the one thing we do know is that if you don't stand up and become what I call a keeper of the well, if you don't stand up and do something about it, this precious commodity is not going to be available to us.
We're out of time. God bless you. Thanks so much, Jeff. Bye-bye. Well, Dr. Stan back here, and that was Jeff Green, and I really appreciate so much his being with us and getting this information out, and I hope everybody, not only here in our area in California, but all across the country, will be sending a fax and an email and calling Governor Schwarzenegger's office and say, veto SB 96, because they really are poisoning our water. And you go to those two websites, you'll realize that they know exactly what they're doing. And the fact that the average American doesn't is simply a reflection of the degree of control that exists today over what the American people think. Well, this is the time, of course, when I have to remind our listeners, Radio Liberty is listener-supported, and we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, and you do that by giving us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of our latest newsletter, deals with finances, tells you what Warren Buffett and Alan Greenspan really think, why, give us a call at that same number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope many of you will want to get my book on Brotherhood of Darkness. You want to get the other material that is readily available through our ministry, which will begin putting all of these things into perspective. Getting our 4 tapes out on water fluoridation. Interviews with Dr. Phyllis Mullinex, who used to be at Harvard University, did the studies on what the effect of fluoridated water in the same proportion that we have for adults does to rats, pre-born and post-born rats, and you find dramatic psychological effects. And when she dared to publish the truth about that, she lost her job. She was fired. So much for scientific integrity. Well, she did eventually get a large settlement, but she can't get a job anywhere at a university anymore because they're all, or many of them are in on it, at least the leaders of the scientific departments. I've talked to a professor up at the University of Toronto in the dental school there, who knows exactly the dangers of fluoride, but as he told me, I'm afraid, I've been threatened, I don't dare come on your program. This is what we're really up against. So it's about time you begin to get informed, understand what's happening, and join us in this battle. You need to get the information on water fluoridation, the 4 tape sets. You need to get the 4 tape set on mercury, because they're poisonous with mercury. You need to get the 4 tape set on why do we still have cancer. You need to get the 4 tape set on aspartame, the taste it kills. You need to get our wonderful 4 tape set with Dr. Blaylock, Life-Saving Health Secrets. These and so many other tape sets are available to Radio Liberty, quickly reviewing them on fluoride, on mercury, on aspartame, aspartame, the 4 tape set on life-saving health secrets, why do we still have cancer, genocide, Laetril. We have the information you're not going to get elsewhere, information that the other people don't want you to hear. And if you want to hear the real story of what this is all about, a wonderful 4 tape set, it's called The New Order of the Barbarians. And it is based upon a talk that was given by Dr. Richard Day, who was the medical director of Planned Parenthood. And it comes with a transcript if you want to get that separately, where he lays out the whole plan of a group he calls The Order, and how they're creating new diseases and suppressing treatments for cancer and promoting cancer. Could this really be going on? Well, all I can suggest, I believe this is an accurate portrayal of what Richard Day, medical director of Planned Parenthood, said back in 1969, because we know that 3 months after he gave that talk, why, of course, Dr. MacArthur went before the House Appropriations Committee, and we actually have his testimony, asking the Congress to give the Defense Department $10 million to create a new disease for mass killing that would destroy the immune system, for which there'd be no immune response. And they appropriated $10 million, and 6 years later, the first case of AIDS occurred. We didn't recognize they were until 1981, but they first occurred in 1976, just about 6 years or 7 years after Congress appropriated the $10 million. We're in real trouble, ladies and gentlemen. Get the facts. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for Radio Liberty. For our provision and protection. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.